gelu banaq dogliyo nugal wa ku darara melay nabadi jogta.
Welcome to Issaka. My name is Amina Isid, and join me as I take you on a journey to explore identity, culture, and belonging. Take a seat as I take you through time, space, and various perspectives of cultural identity. Stay tuned to see where the journey will take us today. Welcome to another episode of Issaka. I'm so excited to welcome today Anisa Hatchi Mohammed. You might have seen her on Twitter. You might have seen her on Clubhouse. Actually, just kind of taking over this online space, really curating a lot of important content for the next generation. And so, Anisa, welcome to Issaka.
Thank you so much, Abaya. It's such an honor to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to have this convo.
Girl, that makes two of us. Kind of kick off this conversation. Who are you? Yatahai. For people who aren't familiar with you or your work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, Yatahai. That is such a good question. By the way, I love the last episode where you interviewed Lena and she talked about her thesis. I was like, wow, that is powerful. So if someone were to ask me, like, who are you? I kind of grappled with that question for a long time, but answer shortly, I would say I'm Anisa Hajji Mohammed, the daughter of Khalif and Hodan, and I am a mother of three. I'm a teacher and educator. I'm a wife. I'm a graphic designer. I'm a writer. I'm many different things, but most of them have to do with creativity. So I'm a creative soul.
I love that. What, like, does creativity give you? And how does that kind of, like, sustain you through, like, all the very real responsibilities that you kind of have?
Definitely. Creativity has always been a really good outlet for me. Like, I remember when I was younger and I would make up these stories, you know, in school, and they would ask you, what did you do over the summer? And you didn't want to answer, well, I was just at home with my parents and siblings.
Yeah.
So I would make up these really elaborate tales. But I always love poetry, reading, writing. So it's always been just an outlet for me just to get out all my different feelings. And right now, as a mother, as a very busy mother, when I sit down and do, like, a design, for example, and I do something Somali and English fusion in that design, it just makes me so happy. It just fills me with so much joy. So that's what it is for me.
I love pretty things. And so I love your designs. I love the fact that they're, like, so aesthetically pleasing and, like, new age, but, like, you'll take a mahmah and then you'll flip it with, like, a really nice image. So, like, could you speak a little bit more about, like, the designs for the daqan that you make and what kind of was the reasoning behind it?
You know, it's funny. It actually started off with kind of a little bit of a joke. So I had this design where it said, Nina and Starbucks ma'abu. So yes. We all know that mahma, where it's like a man who doesn't work doesn't drink sha. So I'm like, in this day and age, we're drinking Starbucks. And so I put that on Instagram, and then Walal Aziz Farah, who is mashallah amazing, he does a lot of work with linguistics. He was like, you should be on Twitter. And I'm like, I am on Twitter, but I have a dead account. So I went on there and I posted it, and it just blew up, you know. And from there, I made different versions for each country, because, you know, our Fadi Kudir in different cities, they have their Tim Hortons, they have their Java House, all those different coffee spots. And so after that, it just kind of took off, and I kind of started exploring, like, different themes. Like, another mahmah I did was, there's one about Gabar and Hakaga Jifto God Amaguri, which is so horrible. It's so negative. A girl should either be, you know, at home or in a grave, which is like, let's get away from this one. And so I changed that to say Gabar Hakaha to Gesied and Gule Sato. So yeah, I take the negative and I kind of turn it positive. And then also another thing I'm pretty intentional about is, like, fusing the two languages, because we were talking briefly about how, like, you know, growing up, we were always criticized for our lack of Somali. Like, you don't speak the perfect Somali. In a country where Somali is not the dominant language, that's not very strange. But growing up, we thought it was. And so that's what my designs are about, kind of like fusing together those two cultures that I have. And representing people like me.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I really, I saw the Starbucks one, and then And then as you kept doing it for every country, I was like, okay, I know Espresso House is like Sweden, Scandinavia. But I was like, where's that? And then where's that? Did people like give you those names, or did you kind of do the research on your own to like kind of know what was popping in each city?
So it was really funny because someone actually messaged me after I put up the Tim Hortons one, because I was familiar with Tim Hortons. Canada's our neighbor, mm-hmm. Up north. And I've heard so much about Tim Hortons. And so I made that one and they asked me like, aren't you going to do one for Kenya? And I was like, well, where's the Kenyatta like coffee spot? Like, where is that? And so because of that one person who messaged me, I made the Kenyan version. And then I asked them like, okay, what about this place? And they told me, and then I messaged my friend in Australia and it kind of became like a kind of little global adventure. So I asked my friend in Sweden and it was really fun. Like I just kept like, I was on a roll. I was just like, let me just keep making more. And then that eventually went to other designs.
Yeah, I think it's also nice, like in that even is showing, like, I think the biggest thing is like, we also get categorized as like diaspora Somalis, but then within that is like the visibility of, or the representation, like each person from like Tim Hortons is different than Starbucks, although the Canadians have both, but I love Timmy's ice caps. So it's nice to also have that representation for each country. It also is kind of showing that the uniqueness that each like, you know, area has and each like kind of Somali diaspora community has.
We have our global connections, but we also have our similarities.
So, okay. You want to talk about My Diasporic Diary? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So My Diasporic Diary is a reflective journal that I published in 2018, which seems like such a long time ago. Like
life before Corona was a different world.
It was literally, it seems like 20 years ago to me, but it was right after I graduated from my grad school. I majored in linguistics. Mm-hmm. And so it was during the summer and I was just like, I had all this creative energy and I was like, I need to do something with it. And so my inspiration was, you know how you go to Target and you see all these beautiful journals, yes. like the travel ones. And I always felt like there was just this gap, you know, like where are our journals? Where are our books, you know? Mm. And so I thought, how can I fill this gap with like what I know now and kind of my creativity? And so I thought about a journal where people like me, third culture kids, diaspora kids, could document their experiences. And so over the summer, just the 3 months, I finished a journal. I was on this, like, yeah, I don't know what kind of energy, what I was drinking back then, maybe some, you know, non-mhaladha and three coffees a day or something. But I finished it and I ended up making like 10 sections in this journal from home, culture, language, love. So it's basically reflective prompts for the person who purchases a journal to just document their experiences. And yeah, 2018, I published it and I kind of like put it on the back burner. A lot of other things happen in life. Mm-hmm. But this year I came back to it and it's been really amazing. I had a Clubhouse discussions about it like almost every night during Ramadan.
I think I ended up on one of those. How was the response to that?
So the response, it was the very first Diasporic Diary night that I held. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I shared a little bit about the journal and then I got really shy and I was just like, oh my God, everyone else can talk, you know? Mm-hmm. And then people were sharing their stories and it was just like, each person who shared was like, I never even said this out loud or like, I haven't shared this story before. And like, we really need the space. And I thought, wow, this is so empowering. This is amazing. And then what happened was the place I read it in is called Reading by Myself. It's a really amazing club on Clubhouse. And so the moderators, Nim'a and Mo, they kind of took me aside and said, okay, let's talk about the structure of my Diasporic Diary nights. And I was like, okay, structure, let's see. I didn't really think about it, you know. Structure and me, yeah, we're on two opposite ends. And so we talked about how like I would share more and like kind of get the discussion going and then people could contribute after. And so with that structure, and I'm so thankful to them for advising me that, it was just incredible. Like I looked forward to it every night. Like I would get my late night coffee ready and I just, you know, it was an amazing, like life-changing experience, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah, I met a lot of cool people. I heard a lot of amazing stories that sounded like mine, but were also different, you know?
Yeah.
So it was incredible.
So having that space for people to come together and really kind of talk about things, like I think especially being like kids of immigrants or young immigrant kids, you know, there's a lot of focus on it. We just need to hustle and like, you know, like succeed. But mm-hmm. reflection is something that's really important that I feel like isn't really too emphasized or discussed in our community. And even having that space to honestly come together and discuss things, how has that changed how you decided to kind of like do you carry out your activism or carry out the work that you do online and in person?
That has been a huge inspiration for me, just to have that little corner for ourselves online or offline. Like, it's been something that has been like, it's been my main motivation. And so whenever I do a design or I start a discussion, I think about like, what do we really need to talk about? Or what do we really need to address? You know, some mm-hmm. days I'll just wake up with a thought like, you know what, I don't like this about our culture. Mm. Or another day I'll wake up and be like, we need to have a positive spin on this one. Or just something that's, you know, kind of brushed under the carpet, like infertility, for example, or, yeah. you know, things that we need to stop doing when it comes to like marriage and leaving single people alone, because we're yeah. so nosy as a community. Yeah. So those are kind of some of the things that come to mind. And I think it's so beautiful that you are also, mashallah, creating this space for us to talk about this. And like, you're also creating this amazing corner where people can talk about their dice work experiences. So thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. I think it's important to give space. And the more people doing it, the more I think will kind of bring about a change. At what point did you feel like you personally that you wanted to do something as opposed to just kind of like keeping your nose down and doing your day job? Like, at what point did you feel like you wanted to like be an active community member and bring about some change?
Right. Yeah, there is like a turning some point in your life where you kind of just realize, right, yeah. that I have this culture. And, you know, for us as third culture kids, diaspora Somalis, I feel like some of us have spent a large portion of our lives kind of suppressing yes. our culture and trying to just blend in, trying not to make trouble, trying not to stand mm-hmm. out. And so for me, it was actually quite the opposite. So mm-hmm. I grew up in a city where there were hardly any Somalis. Whenever I tell people how many Somali families live there, they're just shocked.
How many? Can we compare, please? I grew up in Connecticut, so...
There were three Somali families.
Oh, my town specifically was very small, so we might have been the only one, and there was another family at some point. Now there's 2-3 other families, but we live like 20 minutes. We live so close to everyone else lives in the town next to us. So it's like if we just lived in the suburbs of Minneapolis or something. Connecticut overall, there's probably maybe 30 families, I would say. So we all know each other personally.
I didn't know Somalis live in Connecticut.
Everyone always says that. So I'm always like, yes, what, Trognad? Oh, it's wow. a very settled, quiet community.
That's amazing. I just learned a new fact that Somalis are in Connecticut. We're out there. Mashallah. Yeah, I'm always amazed to see where Somalis are in the world. We literally are everywhere.
Everywhere.
Mashallah. So in Fresno, there were 3 Somali families, and we didn't really see each other much, to be honest. We didn't really connect very well. We lived farther away from each other. And so
Fresno, California.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I've heard about Fresno. Like, I don't even think there's too many people in Fresno. It's like farm country.
Yes, it is. It's like the boondocks. And there's wow. a lot of jokes about it. One person called it the armpit of California. I'm like, okay. I was raised there, but okay.
Wow. How'd you end up in Minnesota then? Like, was it just the Somali migration?
It was we lived in Fresno for about like 17 years. My dad just wow. loved it there. My mm-hmm. mom, not so much. So eventually we moved and went to San Diego. Wow. And then in San Diego, I finished my school, my bachelor's and master's. And then afterwards, after my bachelor's degree, I got married. And then that's when I moved here. So my husband dragged me to Minnesota is what happened.
So are your parents still in California, or are they in Minnesota with you?
My mom moved here and my dad is still back in San Diego because he doesn't really care for the winter. So we're trying to
blame him.
Yeah, we're trying to get him here too, inshallah.
Wow.
But yeah, it's it was growing up, I felt like I really just longed for this identity of like Somali Nimo.
Yeah.
And I remember from a young age that I was obsessed with the Somali language. Not surprisingly, I went into linguistics later on. Mm. But I spent a great portion of my teenage years, even my like middle school years, like researching the very few resources that were out there about the Somali culture and language, because it was something I didn't have, you know, around me. And so I feel like because of that, I kind of just spent my whole life in that. But when I really made a super conscious effort to kind of come back to Mahaladaha, like just get really absorbed in the community and do my part. I think it was after my, when I got into my undergrad, and that's when it kind of dawned on me, like I have, you know, I have the ability to write blogs and I have the ability to connect with people online and do events in the community. And so that's kind of when I started.
I feel like it's undergrad is like the real, for me, it was very like similar, not like really when I was younger, but like when I was 18, I was like, okay, I need to figure out what this identity is going to look like for myself. Like not what my parents gave me or told me about it. And it was, I mean, and a lot of it was honestly just kind of like adding an alternative to the narrative that was already out there. I was like, I didn't grow up thinking so. I mean, I know we're kind of crazy, but like the way these are, that people just going to slay our names in public, I'm not really here for that. So how can we kind of put some respect on our name and our existence? And a lot of that is we also need to personally do our own research. I think like we owe it to ourselves to find out, seek information out for ourselves. So I'm glad that you did that. And then a lot of the resources of what you're doing now is also going to be a huge inspiration and resource for a lot of other young people coming up. So
I hope so. I hope so. That's a goal, inshallah. And you're right about like countering this negative narrative about Somalis. Like even if you go to Google, it's just really sad if you put in like Somali mom, like 90% of the pictures that come up are just like, you know, really destitute, like just poor people that, or like violent pictures. And it's just like, that's not us, you know, like that's just one small story, you know, it's a singular story that's constantly told about us. But yeah, we need to, you know, we need to get all sides. We need to have the Somali excellence. We need to have the Somali average. All sides of us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Nuance is very, very important. And nuance will ultimately like make us human. I really love that. But I also wanted to just like ask you then, what would you want the story? Like if you say you had control of like the media for 24 hours, what story about us would you tell, or what stories about us would you tell?
I would focus on, you know, something that really fascinates me is like how deep our history as Somalis are, like that we've been around for a very long time before Arabs, okay, like before Arabs came to us.
Say that again.
And I would cover that aspect, like starting from the beginning, as you know, whatever records we have. Start with the language. Like I would just take the historical linguistic perspective and kind of go back, because I really feel like as cliche as it sounds, you got to look back in order to go forward, you know?
No, 100%.
That's what I would do. How about you? What would you focus on?
Oh, I think that I would just show, so you said like linguistics, like a historical, like linguistic perspective. I think the sociocultural perspective is very important. And so with that, like comes the arts and things like that. So I think I would just kind of like even the fact that like there are pictures of like, it sounds very basic, but the fact that they're like happy Somalis at one point that were like the school filler. And like, I remember, I think even one time on Clubhouse, you were saying, we were talking about like how Somali women were the happiest Muslim women in the world or something, or the most empowered maybe before the war or something like that. So I think that's very interesting. Like I think the diversity in our land, in our people, in our culture, because I think culture is like a sense of like diplomacy, which the world kind of understands who you are and what you're about. So our narrative right now is like we're pirates and we're refugees and we have a failed state. So I would just counter it with like happy people living in Somalia, which also might, maybe all of it's not accurate to right now, but we have a lot of amazing historical footage, you know, that kind of shows what we were before the state collapsed, you know, and even in the diaspora, the way like Somalis are recreating a sense of home and still retaining that culture. And despite all the issues that they're like facing and navigating and adapting to this new land, there's still a lot of celebration, you know, like even the Burhanpur celebrations is like, I feel like people probably feel like they're back home when they're like, you know, dancing and chanting and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we could say, oh, waqab yalada, but it's the same way that their foremothers for generations by generations, you know, probably have been like showing and recognizing each other. And that's like a deep sense of recognition, I think, when you kind of fall into those cultural traditions. You know, like, and so
there's a design I did that kind of relates to that, where I forget which illustration I use, maybe a yay or something. And I found this really beautiful proverb that said, basically it was, ask those who came before you so you can ask, so you can tell those who come after you. And so I'll have to find the right wording, but it's really beautiful. Just like you said, Burhanpur and all these things, they're like our link to back home. And that's beautiful. How resilient we are, how adaptable, like despite all the negative criticism we get as like, you know, diasporic kids.
Yeah.
We're still out here trying to hang on, you know? So it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to celebrate that we're still coming together, you know, like even if we're coming together and speaking English, you know, like it's still, I think the idea of the coming together and as generations kind of continue, like even the way we're coming together is very different than maybe 15, 20 years ago. You know, they used to, I really like music. So I'm just like, you know, people used to have riots back in the day. That was a big deal. I'm like, we at least like have a space where we get together and have a singer or have some kind of music, just in the sense of like hearing the music with hearing Somali, you know, like it's a way for me, music is how I keep the language alive in my life personally. Like I'm not speaking Somali every single day. Yeah. So I think that that's also really, cool and like really important to kind of highlight that we're still trying to come together. And so that's something, because we could have all just been afraid to come together, because some people are very much on the phrase like, it's not a safe space, I don't want to be around other Somalis, like, you know.
I've heard that a lot. Yeah, like Somalis are this, and it's like, let's get away from the generalizing language. We are many things, we could be many things at once, and you know, we are sometimes things get complicated in our community, but it's our community and we're the ones who are supposed to, like, you know, kind of change the negative, take that on and have conversations. I think it just all begins with just talking to people and just seeing that you're human just like me, and we have more in common than we, you know, than we differ on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the biggest thing, is like, I think a lot of people have had various experiences that might've been, you know, but, you know, when you talk to somebody, like I very much agree, when you talk to somebody, then you can kind of, I mean, even if you don't reach a middle ground, maybe then you can learn a little bit more about their perspective and where they're coming at with things. Like my mom didn't really talk about her life in Somalia. And I was like, that's kind of, I never even thought that was weird. I just kind of was like, no, okay. Like, you know, and then like we did her podcast episode, she talked about her, and I was like, oh, this is still very painful for you to have to go back and think about that, you know? And I would have never realized. I didn't know she still felt homesick 30 years later, you know, like, and yeah. I she just would have adapted. And, you know, this is home.
That's just hitting me with my parents. Like my dad was similar to your mom. He never really shared about his previous life. Mm-hmm. Somalia. He would give us bits and little things, and like, he was really big on sharing proverbs, which is why I like proverbs so much. Mm. Especially when we got in trouble, he would sit us down and be like, "Somali, the wahakum ahmahani."
That's when you're being checked on another level.
Yeah, that's the highest level. My mom, on the other hand, she would talk a lot about her mother and how social she was, and like if someone was passing by, she'd be like, "No, no, come in for sha," and "Kali na la sheke so," and but she also didn't share too much. So in your, you know, in the previous episode, you talked about how, like, you are trying to form the right questions in order to get, you know, more information. And I feel like that's what I have to do. Like, I have to come up with the language so that I don't trigger them. But that also that I kind of like fill those gaps that are very evident right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But being that you live in Minnesota and it's like the second Somalia, I went to Minnesota last week and I was like, wow, every time I'm so surprised, I can't fathom that I'm in America when I'm in Minnesota. especially like the Somali Hafids and stuff like that. So what do you think the next generation is going to look like?
Next generation, I think that it's hard to say what the next generation will look like, but I do know that they're going to be brave. They're going to be vocal. I think they're not going to carry as much shame as our parents and our generation did. Because I think that's still something that we're really struggling with. Even if we are out there in the community and doing our thing, shame is not an easy thing to discard, you know?
Yeah.
So I think with the next generation, they're just by default, they're not going to have as much shame as we did. And I think they're going to be more comfortable in spaces. They're still going to face obstacles because unfortunately this country is, you know, very famous for othering people, and that's not going to change, I don't think, for a long time. But I feel very optimistic about the next generation. Like, I have a 5-year-old, an almost 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old. I have littles that are all very close in age, but I'm very optimistic about their generation, inshallah, and Regenia, that they're just, you know, they embrace their culture, but then they also, like, you know, excel in this culture. Unlike our parents, who it was a complete culture shock for, with us, we were grappling with biculturality. I hope the next generation is like, they're fully immersed in their Somali culture, but then they can also kind of dabble in the other one, you know?
Yeah.
And just have that merged identity with no issues. That's my hope.
Yeah, that's a great, like, the no issues. I feel like it's always the who am I and what am I? But I feel like, honestly, if you equip them with access and resources to both, then it's, everybody has their own kind of space to, like, definitely figure out what that means for them and what that looks like for them. Yes. So
resources are important. That's something that we're really lacking in. You know, with our generation, we're always criticized about our lack of Somali. But the thing is, like, what resources did we have to, like, strengthen our language?
None. We just had shame all the time.
Shame was our teacher. And so I'm hoping, like, I'm here in Minnesota, just, you know, to kind of brag a little bit.
Yeah,
there's going to be a dual immersion program in the city that I live in, St. Cloud. It's going to be from K to 5, which is amazing. So they're going to have a Somali general ed teacher.
Wow.
50% of the time it's going to be in Somali, 50 in English. So that's St. Cloud. And then in Minneapolis, whenever I say Minneapolis, I say Minnesota as if it's the whole. But they're going to have also a program, and it's going to go all the way up to 8th grade, little by little. And a sister that I know is kind of heading that program. Her name is Deqa. She's doing amazing things, mashallah. And I'm actually currently working on posters for their opening, like, celebration.
Oh, yes.
So I'm really excited. It's this coming Friday. And so there's a lot of good things happening in terms of, like, creating resources for our youth so they don't lose the culture and language, inshallah. So inshallah. I'm optimistic.
I mean, that's amazing though, that the Somali community in Minnesota is really kind of doing diaspora in a way. I mean, I don't even know if it's doing diaspora because they've still, like, retained the Somaliness so strongly, but really have created a way and paved a way. And, like, I haven't really seen it too many other places.
Yeah.
But I mean, because if they're learning Somali as well as English, even that access, like, language at such a young age. And it's such for us, even, like, I remember when we were younger and we would go to Sunday school and the ma'ala would be like, how come you guys didn't do your, like, homework? And we were like, we come here one day a week. Like, this is outside of our day-to-day experience. You know what I mean? Like, but then when that has become ingrained in part of their, like, day-to-day life, then it's not tokenized or otherized from their life and their lived experiences. So that'd be, like, a huge paradigm shift for them. That'd be really cool to see how that, like, pans out.
Definitely. The culture is very different. You're right. I feel like when Somalis, there's a bunch of Somalis in a place, like, the population is super huge, they don't really connect as well. Whereas, like, smaller cities, it's like it's like your best friend, seeing them across the street, like, hey, Abdi, Iskawaran, Adakawaran, you actually ask about each other. Where here, it's like people will pass by you, like, I don't even care if you're Muslim, you know?
Yeah. And I always look at it, the difference between big city life and small town life, you know, but, like, in the sense of, like, big cities, like, if you are in New York, nobody's going to go out of their way to say hi to you. But I'm also like, I also feel weird, like, because I'm like naturally, like, I guess relatively extroverted, so I'm like, I want to be like, hi, and then like talk to the other, and then I'm like, no, maybe it's safer if I don't talk to him, like I don't need to talk to him, like I can just let him go about his business and we don't need to acknowledge the fact that we are both Somali. And I'm like, but yeah. I would like to, but you know, I also don't want the situation to go left, then I gotta like right. deal with that. So
he's like, other, like, no, let's not.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have people calling me Javier now. I don't even know how to feel about that. You know what?
You've become an OG.
It's kind of my fault because I really love dressing in bati.
Yeah.
Like, I have my garbasar in bati. I'm not even going to lie. I live in St. Cloud, so it's not as big as Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of also the norm here to just wear your bati. And love I go out and there's teenagers who are like, how are you? And it's like, what did you call me? What? It's okay. I'll embrace it. It's kind of cool, actually.
I mean, I'm really here for making batis like more mainstream. I don't like when I was in a case that everyone used to be like, oh, what, pajama them, had to put their head on. And I'm like, first of all, they're very like khafif and they're gorgeous. And I always like look like I did something different just because the bati has 6 different prints on it. And right.
You can match it with the cardigan and you're good.
Like, yeah, that's what I used to do. I was like, I don't ever want to wear surat anymore.
But you know what? I have a question for you, Baya. Like, when it comes to, you know, supporting our Edos, local Edos, and then yeah. also supporting our sisters who are, mashallah, starting up businesses. Like, just today, I was looking at this Instagram account where they sell diras. Mm. And they now, you know, instead of just putting up the halada picture, they have a model, they have
yeah.
the model, they have the makeup. So I'm thinking, like, a lot of work went into this. Like, I need to support this sis if I need a dira. Yeah. But then it's like, what about the Edo, you know, at the Carmel? Like, which one are we going to support, you know?
I think it depends what you're looking for. Like, because at the Edo Carmel, she's going to be sitting there. She's always going to have a job. Like, Slama Hayoko, Wayne will be selling the same things. Ooh. And sometimes you don't want to have to go into, like, Carmel is a whole day experience. You need to mentally prepare to get into that environment. And I feel like it's not made for us. We want to buy something online. This is my size. This is how I'm going to pay for it. The shipping is going to come through, like, no frills, you know? It's like that paying for convenience or paying for luxury type of thing.
True.
So
true.
It kind of gets into that.
Yeah, Minnesota.
Yeah, though I got my Somalia fix. Well, mashallah, you know, Minnesota gave me my little fix. Like, I got my like henna, I got my batis and dinners. I ate my Somali food, went to a little Somali show. So I feel like I was like, okay, this is a lot easier than traveling 2 days to go to Somalia. You know, like, I might come September for the snappy thing. I'm not sure. Like,
you come through. It was really amazing last time, to be honest, with Hawa Hassan. And
yes.
like, I was shocked at like where all the speakers came from. Like, you know, from UAE, from I think Australia. I'm like, wow, mashallah, this is global. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yassine was my favorite. I came, like, I wanted to see Yassine. Like, he was the last speaker. I don't know if you stayed to see him, but.
Oh, yeah, I was there the whole time. He was, yeah, mashallah. He was very shy and he had a really inspiring speech. I loved his part.
Yeah, it's very compelling.
They changed the name to Somali Diaspora Conference, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have a table booked, me and my sister, because she's an author as well. And so I'm ready to, you know, inshallah, network and, you know, talk to people about my diaspora diary and just, you know, have a good time there. Because I'm debating, like, how much time I'm actually going to be at the table, because I'm like, I don't want to miss out on all the amazing talks.
You could rotate or something. And are you also going to be selling, you said you're going to be selling bookmarks and stuff, or like little posters of your graphic designs?
Yeah, I'll be selling the bookmarks. I'm trying to like make them super fancy with little tassels and everything.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I'll have some of my designs too, inshallah, along with the diaries.
Do you want to create that into like a book of, like, I saw you did like, you're even affirmation cards or something?
I was thinking about making affirmation cards, and like the process is not super long either. And it's not super, super costly. Like, there is, you know, a little bit that you have to put in. But inshallah, that's a goal. I feel like when I think about like where I want to take designs for the daqan, I have like 10 million ideas. So I
need
to narrow it down to, you know, a few things. But yeah, affirmation cards was one of my goals, inshallah.
All right. Well, I love buying fancy, like, fun looking, cool things. I think it'd also be like a cool way to keep the language alive, but also infuse with a little positivity. And so, you know, if it's a poster, me, I buy anything. My mom always comes for me. She's like, you just buy like a frivolous, you know how you talk about Target and the diet? I'm like a Target junkie. So, you know, Anissa, if you make us things that we would see at Target with a Somali twist on it, then you definitely have a huge consumer base and I will buy all of your things.
I'm a Target junkie too. I go in for one thing and leave with a $200 bill. And it's not even the like the quantity. It's really like Target. They only Target stuff. But it's worth it. I love Target. It's my happy place.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. So what could we see from you in the future, Anissa?
Inshallah, my goal is to have my website up soon, anissahaji.com. And that's where I'm going to just house everything. I'm going to have the little shop there with the designs and the journals. I'm also going to have like design services and hopefully a blog too, because I love, my first love is writing. So
yeah,
that's in the works.
All right, inshallah, sounds good. I'm trying to like, so in terms of like the conversations and curating honest conversations and stuff like that too, I feel like that's also a big part of like the work that you're doing lately. So what does that look like? Where are we going to see you? I want to see you personally on the Somali, like the Somali cultural circuit, you know, like Somali, like big festival, stuff like that, like Mahanno Haisa.
Inshallah. The goal is that I'm currently working with a nonprofit organization, a local one, and my hope is to start Haladha Dice Work Diary Nights, like workshops, not Dice Work, Dice Work Diary workshops for the community. And so my goal is to start with my city, because, you know, you got to start at home.
Yes.
And then to branch out, go to the bigger city. And I have a friend who's helping me as well, trying to get in contact with more organizations to kind of help with that. And so I really want to bring this conversation to our community and like even invite parents and grandparents, the local Habariya, the local Edo, they can all come.
All right, well, thank you so much. It was so great talking to you. Check out Anissa Haji online, everyone.
Thank you so much, Abai Amina, for having me today. Really enjoyed talking with you, and keep up the awesome work you're doing with your podcast, mashallah.
All right, thank you. Kukala nakrono, melwana.